is Players Only, a show about high school sports from high school students. Presented by Point Guard Advisors. Find them at pointguardadvisors.com.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Players Only, presented by Point Guard Advisors here on ESPN Radio Syracuse 97.7, 100.1 FM. I'm Matt Slocum alongside my co-host Ryan Story. And Ryan, we got a lot to talk about today in terms of the high school football landscape. This was the second to last week of the regular season, and there was a lot of games that were played yesterday. And it's just gotten a lot crazy. And we start with perhaps the most craziest class in high school football right now, and that is Class AA, in which now you have, we talked about in our first show 2 weeks ago, that Class AA was looking at becoming a, you know, sort of like a one-team class where the North Stars, the Cicero North Syracuse was the top team and everybody else was sort of in the middle. Now, it's now essentially a four-team, perhaps even a five-team race for the top spot in Class AA. Now you have Liverpool on top of Class AA right now. And the North Stars, Corcoran, and Baldwinsville all at 4-2 in second place. And even Utica Proctor, the fifth team now in the mix, at 3-3. So, with that being said, let's start with the North Stars. And we talked last week they played against Liverpool at the Warriors' home field, and Liverpool won that one 21-14. The North Stars got back to business this past Friday and took on who was then the top team in Class AA. That was Corcoran, and just had their way with them. I mean, Cicero North Syracuse won 34-0. So what were your thoughts on that one?
It was just a really good game by the North Stars, where they really just didn't let Corcoran get in the game at all. Jackson Rasmovsky, the CNS quarterback, just looked very impressive the entire game, and the CNS defense was able to shut out Corcoran. And you just look at how the entire offense managed to play a part. Rasmovsky had 3 total touchdowns, including a 60-yard rushing touchdown, while their running back also had 2 rushing touchdowns. And their just ability to dominate on both sides of the ball was very impressive.
Yeah, Farouk Ibrahim had the 2 5-yard runs in the fourth quarter. And he also said Jason Rasmovsky had a 60-yard run as well as a 1-yard run as well. Mason Ellis caught a 10-yard pass from Rasmovsky in the first quarter. And again, Corcoran just couldn't keep up. And you know, that's how they got shut out. You know, Cicero North Syracuse just scored 1 touchdown in the first 3 quarters, and then 2 in the fourth quarter sort of sealed it. Wasn't even close. Speaking of not even close, let's talk about what happened in Class A, because you were at this game, Ryan.
Yeah.
The West Genesee versus Christian Brothers Academy, and we talked about how in Class A, CBA was actually doing a pretty good job. They're effectively leading the Class A American heading into this week's games, and then they just get shut out by the West Genesee Wildcats, who, by the way, as I mentioned before, had to drop down. They were in double A for a while, then they dropped down because of school population size, so now they're in Class A. And West Genesee just shut them out 21-0. And now, essentially, it's now a, FM is now the top dog in the Class A American, along with Carthage in the Class A National at 2-2. So what happened to CBA on Friday?
It was their senior night, and so all their players were super excited for the game, and it just looked like they came out of the gate, and West Genesee's game plan was able to stop CBA's offense pretty well. You saw how they kind of played a 3-safety deep defense for a majority of the game, but still were able to get pressure on the quarterback, and that kind of shut out their deep passing game as well as being effective against their run. So they were just able to pretty much limit the Jordan Ray and the CBA offense. And speaking of Jordan Ray, he got injured midway through the second quarter.
Ouch.
And that kept him out until pretty much the midway through the third. And that was just a crushing blow to a CBA team that really needed their star quarterback right there.
Yeah, and that might actually be a huge blow, especially suffering an injury late in the season. You don't know if he's going to be ready for the playoffs, which, again, kick off essentially a little over a week from now. This coming week is the last week of the regular season. For Wes Jenny, though, you got to give him credit. As you said, their defense was pretty top-notch, including recovering a fumble in the end zone in the fourth quarter to make the score where it was 21-0. So, again, that's another class to keep an eye on, especially in the Class A American. ESM, by the way, they won on Friday. So now they're back into the thick of things as well. So that's, again, a class to keep an eye on as we go through. Let's talk now, switch to Class B, where we had a really, really, really tight game between Oneida and Chittenango. And Oneida ended up winning this one by 26-24. They almost let the game got away from them. I mean, they were up 26-8 heading into the, up 20-8 heading into the fourth quarter. They got a 1-yard touchdown run by Bryson Carinci, missed the extra point. So you're looking at a 26-8 game. This should be a walk in the park. But then Chittenango comes back with two quick touchdowns, a 10-yard run by Aiden Cavada, and then a Hunter Taylor 45-yard touchdown pass from Cavada. So, and to make the score 26-24, late effort there by Chittenango to at least make this a game. If you look at the standings for Class B, Oneida in the Class B East is at 3-3. Chittenango was 1-4 now. So this is a game featuring two teams in the bottom of the class, but it still turned out to be a pretty good game.
Yeah, definitely. You saw how they were able to take, Oneida was able to take a lead early on in the game, even going up 20 points in the third, and for Chittenango to come back and really make it a close game was impressive by them. Cavada for Chittenango really had a great all-around game, getting a touchdown through the air and a touchdown on the ground, and he just had a pretty good rapport with his receivers the entire time, and Oneida's early lead was enough to keep them in the game, but it was definitely impressive with how Chittenango was able to convert on all of their two-point conversions to only make it a two-point game.
Yeah, and to give Chittenango credit, I mean, you know, the Bears did an excellent job of, you know, making this a game, as you said. Even though they're 1-4, they're trying their best to at least have a shot at making the playoffs. I believe you need to have at least a 400 record to qualify for the postseason. I could be wrong on that. That might be something to ask Executive Director John Rathbone, who we'll have on the show later on. But yeah, they're trying to fight their way through. I mean, it's the same thing with Oneida. So great effort there by the Chittenango Bears. On to Class C now, and Skane Atlas. We talked about this a couple weeks ago and how it's pretty much turning out to be, you know, Skane Atlas class. And they continue their unbeaten ways. They beat Bishop Ludden 28-6 on Friday night. And, yeah, I mean, Skane Atlas just essentially had their way. The only points scored by Bishop Ludden, Nazir Kinsey had an 8-yard run. But by that point, you know, essentially the game was over, because on the next play, Grayson Brunel had an 80-yard kickoff return for a touchdown, and that essentially killed whatever momentum that Bishop Ludden had after that touchdown. So, you know, is really Class C right now, is Class C really going the way of Skane Atlas right now, or is there another team in Class C that might surprise people?
I mean, you just have to think Skinny Atlas is definitely the best team in the league, or in the class. General Brown is also 6-0 in the other division of that, but Skinny Atlas just has a lot of great players. Like Grayson Brunel, he had a receiving touchdown, a rushing touchdown, a kick return touchdown. He basically did everything except pass for a touchdown. You just look at how dominant that team is, and it would be a surprise for another team to upset them. But you do have teams like Kaz and General Brown, maybe even like a team like Little Falls that could be able to upset them and maybe take the division by or the class by surprise.
I think you also got to take a look at Casanova. They're 4-1, 3-1. They're, of course, they're the other Lakers team. There's two Lakers teams in Class C, Skin Atlas and Casanova. They share the same nickname. You got to take a look at them, because if those two teams meet in the Class C playoffs, which I honestly think that is what's going to happen, that they're going to meet there, that might be something to really keep an eye on. I really look forward to the matchup. But, you know, here's my thing for a potential Class C final. Skane Atlas against General Brown. As you said, both teams are 6-0. That should be a really fun one if the final turns out to be like that. And finally, we go to a game that took place on Saturday, I believe out in Class D, between Waterville and Beaver River. Again, two teams in the bottom of Class D, but, you know, again, it's one of those games that, you know, you just kind of like scratch your head and saying, how do you get a score like that? But it turned out to be a 7-6 final in favor of Waterville. They get their first win of the season for Waterville. So heading into looking at what Class D is looking like, Dodgeville is unbeaten at 5-0 in the Class D East Division. Adirondack also unbeaten at 6-0 in the Northwest Division. So it turns out it's going to be those two teams. But you also got to look at Cato Meridian as well. They're 4-1 on the year. Also, don't count out Utica Notre Dame. They're at 3-3. So how do you see Class D going the rest of the way?
Although Dodgeville doesn't technically have the best record, which would go to Adirondack, I would take Dodgeville here. They have just managed to pretty much demolish any team that has come in their way. But again, you mentioned two really good teams in Utica Notre Dame and Cato Meridian that could definitely throw a wrench in the plans of Dodgeville and Adirondack, where just a couple bounces go their way, and they're not that far off from these two top-tier teams, and they could definitely pull off an upset. But you have to look at Dodgeville and Adirondack. Both have scored over 200 and allowed less than 50 points over the course of the season. So you have to assume that these two teams are just the class of the conference, really.
Yeah, and to put this into perspective, Dodgeville has scored 202 points on the year. They've only given up 46. For Adirondack, they're 6-0. They've scored 227 and only given up 41. Throughout the course of their six games. So two really good teams shaping up in Class D. So we'll take a break. When we come back, we will have John Rathbun, the executive director of Section 3, along with Eric Dievendorf. Yeah, that's right. You heard me. Eric Dievendorf will join us later on in the show as well. He was named an assistant coach for a local high school girls basketball team. Yes, girls basketball starting up pretty soon, as well as boys basketball and all the other winter sports. We'll talk to both of them about that. We'll be right back with more Players Only presented by Point Guard Advisors here on ESPN Radio Syracuse 97.7 and 100.1.
This is Players Only, a show about high school sports from high school students. Presented by Point Guard Advisors. Find them at pointguardadvisors.com.
Welcome back to Players Only here on ESPN Radio Syracuse 97.7, 100.1 FM, presented by Point Guard Advisors. We're sort of waiting for John to call into the studio here, so we're just going to fill in until then. Oh, I take that back. He is now here. So we thought we had him. Oh, wait. Okay. I'm keeping an eye on here. It looks like we had him, and then we didn't have him. Then we sort of got him back, and then,
yeah,
you know. Oh, wait, hold on. Let's see if we can get him in here soon. So we're now going to be talking with Section 3 Executive Director. Well, hold on. Keep that in mind. So, yeah, Paulie Scabilia, our just came in and said, we'll just talk for a while until we can get him. apparently, we're still working out. He's been calling into the studio, so it's been kind of crazy. It's kind of unusual for a Sunday morning. So let's talk a little bit more about what was going on in Section 3. In terms of other sports other than football, I just found this out interesting. The Mexico girls swimming and diving team won the OHSL meet this past weekend, and it was just really, really good stuff. And I'm really proud of the swimming and diving program in Mexico. By the way, that's my old high school. I went to school at Mexico, and I'm really proud of the swimming and diving team for both guys and girls. In fact, the 2008-2009 boys swim team was actually inducted into the Mexico Sports, Mexico Academy Central School Sports Hall of Fame as well. So really good stuff there. Shout out to all you guys back home in Mexico. But now we have John Rathbun on the line here. John, can you hear me?
I sure can. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you, John. And along with Ryan here, we're joined by the Section 3 Executive Director, John Rathbun. And John, let's talk a little bit about how crazy this past year has been with the COVID-19 pandemic. How are things have gone for Section 3 in terms of the pandemic and how things have been going so far? I mean, it's been crazy and hectic, isn't it?
Actually, I think we're in a lot better place than we were a year ago, because if you remember last fall, we really had nothing. So this year, we started back in August with the students practicing, and we still had some concerns because we weren't really quite sure on what was going to unfold. And let's remember, we're still in the middle of a pandemic. So all of our students worked extremely hard during the summertime. Most of them individual type workouts, but they came to practice to start their season. And whatever obstacle that was in front of them, I think our students, our coaches, and our athletic administrators did a great job being able to offer opportunities for our students to compete this fall. And they've done it. They've done a great job. We're basically wrapping up our fall season right now, our regular season, getting ready for playoffs. We're doing our seeding meetings today in soccer and field hockey. We've already had some sectional championships in golf and in tennis. So I think the season's been very, very good. We've had some obstacles that we've had some teams, some individuals go into quarantine, which I think we expected that leading into this fall. We do have a shortage of officials. We do have some problems with bus drivers. So we've had a lot of obstacles this fall that we've had to address. But I think the bottom line is, a lot of times we talk about mental health for our students, but I think the mental health is for everybody. Everybody wanted to get back to a normal type of a fall season. Not only the players, the coaches, the communities, they wanted a little bit of normalcy back again, and to be able to go watch that field hockey game or go and watch that swim meet or volleyball, whatever we had. So I think it's been a successful fall season. Looking forward to our playoffs coming up, starting this week, and hopefully we can get back to more and more of a normal type pattern that we're all used to.
Yeah, John, definitely. And you play a major role in the Section 3 athletics. And so, what is the decision making process behind the scenes when deciding like what COVID impact games will be rescheduled, which will be canceled, stuff like that?
So we follow the CDC and the New York State Department of Health guidelines. So they're really, they're our ringmaster. They tell us what we can do, what we can't do. So we follow them. We work with all of our schools, and in Section 3, we have 106 schools that we deal with. The problem that we have is that we have 11 different counties that may have different restrictions within their own communities. So we have to work through all that when we stage these athletic events. So there's obstacles that there's obstacles that we have to face. But I think we've done a good job, and the key here is just communicating with all of our administrators, our superintendents, our athletic directors, our league directors, our sport coordinators. So there's an awful lot of planning that goes into this. But I think, that we've all sat down and said, what can we do, or what do we have to do in order to give opportunities for our students? And so I think we've done that, and we continue to do that. And so we're really looking forward to what this week and what this next month is going to present for us.
So, John, you mentioned earlier that the seating meetings are going on right now for soccer and field hockey. The seating meetings for football, I believe, are next Sunday.
Correct.
So, going into this, again, with the postseason coming in, we're getting close towards the tail end of the season. As you know, the weather's getting colder. What are the postseason guidelines, if any? So, if a team tests positive, has a player that tests positive for COVID, and they're in the postseason, what's the strategy for that going forward?
So, basically, what a team has to do in order to qualify for sectional play is, first of all, they have to play at least 6 games in every sport except football. You have to play at least 3 games. And then you have to win at least 40% of your games, whether it's in class, in your league, or overall record. You have to have a 40% record in order to qualify for sectional play. The thing we're going to do a little bit different this fall is that we know a lot of teams haven't been able to fill out their entire fall schedule for a number of different reasons. So teams are actually going to qualify and be seated on the actual games that they played. So you might have some schools that played only 8 soccer games. You might have some schools that played 12 soccer games. You might have some that played 14. So we're going to take a look at their overall record and try to figure out, you know, do they qualify for sectionals and where will they be seated in our sectional tournament moving forward. And we understand, you know, every school has had some sort of a setback one way or another, whether it be with students, whether it be the athletes, whether it be coaches. And so we're going to take that into consideration when we see these teams today. But it's a little bit of a challenge, but I think we're going to be able to handle that.
So, John, you mentioned that football has an exception to the minimum of 6 games where they only have to play 3. What's the thinking behind this exception?
So that's actually a state rule that we're following. So that's always been in place. So every sport has a minimum number of games you have to play in order to be eligible for postseason play. Football just happens to be 3, only because they can only play once a week, and they, you know, the regular season is 7 games, and so that's 3 that they have to play. But most sports are 6 games, you know, whether it be soccer or basketball in the wintertime or baseball in the springtime. You know, each student has to participate in at least 6 events, but football is a little bit different.
So, John, speaking of postseason football, it'll be great to have the Section 3 football finals back inside the Carrier Dome with the new roof and everything and all the new lighting going on. Are you pretty excited about that? I mean, I know I am, and I've never set foot inside the Carrier Dome since they finished the roof. So how's it going to feel for you knowing that the postseason has been brought back and having the finals back inside the Carrier Dome?
So first of all, the Carrier Dome staff that we work with and we've always worked with are excellent to work with, and they're excited to have us back. We're excited to have us back, and I know that's a goal for every football player within Section 3 when they start practice that first day, is to make it to the Carrier Dome. So, you know, the regular season, they work hard, and they want to get into this playoffs, and they want to step foot in that Carrier Dome. And I think, you know, just getting there is great, but then once you walk in that door as a student athlete, and you get to change in the SU locker room, and you get to run out on that field, that's an experience that those kids won't forget the rest of their life. And we talk about that, you know, before that game, is that, you know, you're gonna think about this for the next 20, 30, or 40 years of your life, how you step foot in, and let's take advantage of that opportunity, and let's appreciate it, because there's no other section in New York State that plays their sectional championship in a facility like that. I mean, I think that's pretty incredible, and it's an opportunity for our students, not only the football players, but the cheerleaders, the bands that go there, you know, the community members that go there. It's just something that they're very, very proud of. Win or lose, and everybody wants to go there and win, but win or lose, it's just something they're going to remember the rest of their life. And we can't thank the staff at Syracuse University enough to make us feel so welcome and make it a first-class experience. So I think our students are treated exactly the same way that the SU football team is treated when they go in there. So we really appreciate it. We enjoy our relationship with the Carrier Dome, and I know our students just think the world of that place.
So, John, I'm playing football right now for a JV team, and I've seen almost an uptick in unsportsmanlike conduct penalties. Is that like a somewhat new point of emphasis for officials that's been focused on more recently?
So we actually in Section 3 have a sportsmanship committee that that they deal with all of our sports in the fall, and that's always our top priority is sportsmanship, because our students realize that not only do they represent themselves, their families, their school, and their community. So you know, that's something that we just try to stay on top of. We try to curtail any kind of negative behavior, whether it be during the game or in the stands. We try to stay on that as best as we can. And I think everybody who goes to a high school event wants that positive experience. I don't think anybody wants a negative experience on a Friday night or a Saturday afternoon. And so we work hard with our athletic administrators. We work hard with our school superintendents to provide a positive experience for everybody that goes to a high school event. So we try to stay on that as best we can.
Well, John, thank you for taking the time to come on to the show today. Wish you nothing but the best of luck the rest of the way. And hopefully he gets thank you again for calling in on the Sunday morning, John.
Okay,
and
thanks for having me.
Yep, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, okay, have a great day, John.
Bye-bye.
Yep, bye. So that we will take a break. When we come back, we will have Eric Devendorf, yes, the Syracuse legend, on the phone. He's going to talk to us about a little bit of what's going on in terms of him going on with the high school sports world. So don't go away. More Players Only when we come back here, presented by Point Guard Advisors on ESPN Radio Syracuse 97.7 and 100.1.
This is Players Only, a show about high school sports from high school students. Presented by Point Guard Advisors. Find them at pointguardadvisors.com.
And welcome back to Players Only here on ESPN Radio Syracuse 97.7, 100.1, presented by Point Guard Advisors. And now we're going to talk with the man, the myth, the legend, and that is none other than Eric Devendorf. How's it going, Eric?
Going good, man. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you on here. So real quick question, has the all the euphoria from winning the basketball tournament waned off yet, or are you still celebrating that?
Oh no, we're done celebrating. We celebrated enough after the game and then the following week, so it was definitely some great memories and a great, you know, 10 days, and just happy we were finally able to get it done after 7 years of trying.
So, Eric, I hear you're now a coach somewhere in a local school district. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I'm actually taking the JV girls basketball job at Liverpool High School. My daughter's actually in eighth grade in Liverpool School District, so hopefully I'll be able to coach her maybe this year, and if not, next year. And I'm just looking forward to it. It's going to be different for me, but I'm excited to help out the girls and, you know, get them better at their games. But I think just helping them out in life as well. So it's something I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, you were obviously a great high school player yourself as you went to Syracuse University. What are certain traits that you think make a high school basketball player great?
Well, I think it's just to be great at anything, you have to be consistent with your work ethic. You have to be able to fight through adversity, the ups and downs, because that comes with it, especially being an athlete. You're going to have a lot of ups and downs. So, you know, being able to fight through that adversity, be consistent with your hard work, and then also have good people in your corner. It always helps to have people when times get rough to be there to support you and to lift you up and to encourage you to, you know, keep on doing great things. So I think those are a couple of the traits that not only for high school athletes, but just athletes overall, is to be consistent with your hard work and, you know, to keep in the back of your mind that adversity comes and goes, and you know, depending on how you deal with it, that really can you know, reveal a lot of things as an athlete and as a person. So yeah, just focusing on really staying consistent with the hard work.
You know, now Liverpool now has two former Syracuse legends serving as coaches for their basketball programs. Ryan Blackwell, obviously the head coach at Liverpool for the boys basketball varsity squad. So how does it feel to, you know, to join Ryan Blackwell in as a Syracuse legend, per se, at a local high school like Liverpool?
Yeah, it feels good, man. Black's one of my really good friends. You know, I've been following him ever since he's been coaching at Liverpool, and obviously he's been doing a unbelievable job. He had the undefeated, state championship run. And then obviously he's been winning a ton of games. So it's going to be fun to get up there and be with people that I know. And the AD up there, Ari Lieberman, is a great guy, and he's brought great people into the program and done a lot of great things for the school in general. So again, just looking forward to getting up there and helping some people, and trying to bring some of my knowledge to the game and helping these girls out.
Yeah, and in college you played under one of the greatest coaches of all time, Jim Boeheim. How do you think playing under him is going to help you with your new role as the JV girls coach? Like, are you going to put that 2-3 in or what?
Oh yeah, I could throw that in whenever. I know that like the back of my hand. But I just learned a whole lot from Coach Boeheim. Obviously, playing for him and then being able to be on staff for a few years and just be in those meetings and soak up all that knowledge. To be in there with the Hall of Fame coach is priceless. And I learned a lot of lessons from him when I played for him, but really even more so when I was on staff. Just the little nuances of things that he looks at every single day in practice and film, before and after the game. So I could definitely put a lot of that stuff into my coaching philosophy. And then, like you said, the 2-3 zone, that'll always be there. I can always put that in whenever I need.
So, Eric, you are obviously, you've gone through the recruiting process as a high school student. When you're being recruited by these colleges, what were some of the questions that you had in terms of all these, all these coaches that would come by and, talk to you about their program? So what kind of questions did they ask you?
Well, you know what? I probably know more now than I did back then. Back then I was just young and dumb, I guess you would say. But I think back then I was so focused on the game that I just, I just wanted to go play basketball. I wasn't really asking too many questions. But now I think for student athletes, it's super important to, really ask about the education, about after when you leave, or is that college still going to be there to support you? And then obviously, on the basketball side of things, just the playing time and the player development as well. How much time are the coaches going to spend with you, outside of the practice and things like that. So I think, for young kids today, they definitely want to be able to do their research and ask a lot of questions because they want to get as much as they can out of the recruiting process. And then when they choose a school, they want to be able to get as much as they can out of that school. And that's from an athletic standpoint and also an education standpoint. So it's always good to ask a lot of questions. And, for me, I think like the recruiters, when they weren't asking me a lot of questions, they're more so, wanted me to come and play for them. So I think it's smart to be able to ask a lot of questions nowadays as a student athlete to get the most out of the process.
Yeah, and what would you say is the hardest part about the high school to college transition? Would it be like education on the basketball court?
I think a big thing, going from high school to college is just being able to deal with time management. You're by yourself. You get a lot of freedom. Obviously, being a college athlete, you're more of a high-profile student, so you get a lot of attention. And sometimes that can be tough to deal with for people. They get, a big head and start to miss class or, not taking care of the responsibilities that they need to be successful. So I think the biggest thing is time management, just knowing how to take care of your classes, get your work done, be able to get to the study sessions, and then obviously take care of practice and workout sessions before and after, and then balancing all that while trying to be successful playing in the game. So it can be tough, especially at first for an athlete coming in not really being used to that at a high-level university. But I think the more they practice it early on, before they get to school, the better they'll be when they get there.
Now, you had served as a strength and a conditioning coach at Syracuse. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, I guess that's the title they put me. I wasn't really a strength and conditioning coach, more so like a player development / mentor role, just helping those guys. I was on staff at Syracuse for 2 years, so I was just a guy that could relate to the players. I was fresh off of playing professionally, and I had a lot of knowledge to give to these guys. You know, being a part of the program already, we talked about the 2-3 zone, so just kind of trying to help these guys transition. Like you said, from high school to college, and make it as smooth as possible for them.
So how does it feel now that you've gone from an assistant to a sort of a head coaching role now with the JV girls basketball team? What's your mode of thinking heading into this season?
Just to have fun and try to teach these girls as much as I can. Obviously, it's not the college level, but I want to go in there and be organized and try to bring a lot of value to these girls. I mean, not all these girls are going to be, college athletes. A lot of these girls are just going to play high school and that's it. But I want to be able to teach them, life lessons, because a lot of stuff you learn in sports is, stuff that it can be off the court, off the field, whatever it is. So, I'm trying to come in there and share all my knowledge and experiences with them, what I learned through the game, and hopefully that can translate to them, and they could use it on the court, and eventually when they're done, use those lessons off the court as well.
Yeah, and you're one of the top 1-2% of basketball players in the world, and obviously you're extremely athletic. When you were in high school, did you play multiple different sports? And if you did, do you think that was the best approach? I've heard some people say that playing multiple sports is better than just focusing on one. What is your opinion on that?
So for me, when I was young, I played every sport. I mean, I was just an athlete. I was one of those guys who would just pick up a baseball bat or a football and just naturally be good at it. But once I started to get older, and I'd say probably, well, it was early on for me, probably like the grade, I had to make a decision between basketball and baseball, which one I was really going to focus on. And, obviously I chose basketball. That's when AAU started in the spring, and that kind of conflicted with baseball. So I chose basketball, and really from an early age, I really knew what I wanted to do. I know that's kind of, not common a lot these days, and obviously it's kids play every sport and it's tough to focus on one, but I knew what I wanted to do. I knew that I wanted to be a basketball player, and it's different for everyone. I think playing a lot of sports is great. It's great for camaraderie. It's great for social aspects, just having that that team atmosphere and things like that. But again, I think if you, want to be great at one sport, and particularly get a college scholarship or be a pro, then you really got to put in the work and focus on that. Not saying, again, that you can't play other sports, but if you really want to be good at something, I think a lot of times you just got to be able to be disciplined and focus in on that one thing.
Well, Eric, thank you for taking the time to come on the show this morning. I know it's not easy calling in at 8 o'clock in the morning when you really want to sleep in on a Sunday. But thank you for taking the time. By the way, the Orange Tip-Off event is next Friday. You planning on going?
We'll see, man. We'll see. I definitely want to check them out. If not, I know I'll definitely be at a lot of games this season. So, but I appreciate you guys having me on, and good luck going forward. You guys are doing great things, and I'm wishing the best for you, man.
All right, the man, myth, legend, Eric Devendorf. Thank you so much for joining us, and good luck this upcoming season.
Appreciate you guys.
All right, take care.
Thank you, Eric.
You too. Yep.
Bye. Well, we'll take one more time out. When we come back, we will preview the last week of the high school football season in Section 3, and it's going to be a doozy. We'll be right back to wrap up this edition of Players Only, presented by Point Guard Advisors here on ESPN Radio Syracuse 97.7 and 100.1.
This is Players Only, a show about high school sports from high school students. Presented by Point Guard Advisors. Find them at pointguardadvisors.com.
And we're back here to wrap up another version of Players Only, presented by Point Guard Advisors here on ESPN Radio Syracuse 97.7, 100.1. And let's get right to it. Last week of the regular season for high school football here in Section 3. And let's start with a Thursday night battle between Auburn and East Syracuse Manoa. I mentioned earlier in the show, ESM won their game last week. They're now 3-4 in overall. Auburn is 3-3. So let's talk about this one. In the head-to-head the last last game these two teams met was 2 years ago, before the pandemic hit. Auburn ended up winning 43-14. So ESM, they're riding high off their win last week. How do you think this one will go?
Yeah, ESM definitely has some good momentum going after their close win versus Carthage, 41-38. And, you know, both teams are pretty even. Both three wins, East Syracuse, just ESM just has one more loss. And so like, it's definitely a close game. Auburn's last game versus FM was canceled, so that's got to be disappointing for Auburn to see their season kind of slipping away due to COVID. But I would have to take ESM just because they're COVID, like they haven't had as many issues with the pandemic, and so I think that they have more momentum coming into this game.
Now let's shift gears. Let's go to Class AA now for Fridays, starting with a Friday slate. Liverpool, 5-2 overall now, the top team in Class AA. Who would have thunk? They're taking on Corcoran, who was the top team in Class AA for all of a week until they got shut out by CNS on Friday. The last time these two teams met was back in the spring season, back in April. Liverpool beating Corcoran 41-12. The last time they played in the fall, though, was October 4th, 2019. Liverpool won 22-21. So we're looking at a pretty tight game here. I mean, Liverpool coming off their big win over Rome Free Academy 42-7 last week. Again, Corcoran being shut out by CNS 34-0 last week. So is this a trap game for Liverpool? I mean, they have to go on the road to take on Corcoran. Is this a trap game?
It definitely could be. You see, Liverpool has been on a four-game win streak coming off their win versus CNS and Rome Free Academy. They definitely look like the best team in the class as of right now. But, you know, I'd have to take Corcoran in this game. They did just get shut out by CNS, but I think they're a great team with great coaching, and I could definitely see them pulling an upset on Liverpool. If I was predicting the scores, I'd have to take Corcoran in this one.
Yeah, so we're running close on time here. So one more game really to look at, going all the way to Class C, Solvay at Skane Atlas, a 6:30 kick on Friday. And the last time these two teams met was way back in 2018, so almost 3 years ago. On October 5th that year, Skane Atlas won 49-14. However, in the matchup before that, 2016, Skane Atlas beat Solvay by 147-46. Heading into their last five, Solvay coming off a 34-27 win over Clinton. Skane Atlas again beating Bishop Ludden 28-6. Does Skane Atlas finally get their first loss of the season, or they're just going to continue going unbeaten?
Looks like Skane Atlas is going to continue going unbeaten. You look, they've won the last five games they've played against Solvay, spanning back over the last decade. And it just doesn't seem like Skane Atlas can be beaten. Between their amazing quarterback and outstanding running back, they just look like, compared to their class, probably the best team in their class, definitely.
As I said, this is the last week of the regular season. All games being played on either Thursday or Friday. No Saturday games this week, with a seeding meeting next Sunday at the Section 3 headquarters. So that'll be something to look forward to as well. So that'll do it for this Players Only broadcast. For my co-host Ryan Storia, for our guest today, John Rathbun and Eric Devendorf, I'm Matt Slocum, wishing you a very pleasant, good rest of your Sunday. And we'll be back here next week with more here of Players Only, 8 a.m. next Sunday. Only 2 weeks until Halloween. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Two weeks until Halloween. What are you dressing up as?
I don't know. Yeah, it's probably going to have something to do with sports, you know? Got to get one of those funny costumes.
I had to ask. So that'll do it again. We'll talk to you again next week. You've been listening to Players Only here on ESPN Radio Syracuse 97.7 FM and 100.1. We'll talk again next week. Take care, everybody.
Have a good day.